Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Tweeting, do you want me to retweet anything? I did tweet,
so feel free to retweet.
Retweet. Survivor Specialist Bill and Alexa are back, and that was the end of a conversation between Peridium and us beforehand. but yes, please retweet, Peridium. We would appreciate that. We are tonight with Peridium for the first time in a little while, actually. We're going to be talking about Survivor 44 and the new era. We are just 2 days away from Survivor 44's premiere, which is crazy to think about. It was probably the shortest offseason ever because they released this cast right as soon as the month changed, before the month even changed. So we have a lot to talk about. We have a gigantic elephant in the room, which is that there's a new podcast. And how are we all going to handle this? What does that mean for the people like Phil, Alexa, Peridium? More importantly, Rob, what does that mean for Rob? we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about kind of where this show has gone since COVID happened, 41, 42, 43, the way it has evolved there and where we're hoping it's kind of going to go. We know a little bit about what's going to happen in season 44, but we don't know all that much, but Peridium, you're here. You know that this is going to just be more of a conversation. How's that making you feel? You ready to just kind of blab? Or
I mean, I'm on fire tonight. You know, I cannot wait to talk about Survivor with you guys. I'm always open. I love a good conversation about my favorite show. It's the thing that's been on my mind like constantly for the last week, as we talked about. It's just I've been devoured by Survivor, and it feels weird, but we're gonna have a season in 48 hours. Mm-hmm. It hasn't really caught up to me yet. It's been both a long off season and a quick one. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about the new era of the show and Jeff's new podcast. What's that going to be about? I'm intrigued to see what the heck he's going to do. What is he going to talk about? How candid is he going to actually be?
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about, well, first of all, also just crazy. This is starting on Wednesday. I don't know if it's that it was like March 1st, if that made it feel like it was going to be farther, but it, because February is a short month, I'm not going to explain calendars to everybody who's listening. I was saying this to Phil earlier on some Patreon podcasts, but I believe a lot of this Jeff podcast is going to be about production and behind the scenes stuff. And as somebody who, even before podcasting, that was always the most interesting to me. And I remember during COVID, I think there was an EW article that came out about the logistics behind a marooning. I read that like 10 times. Mm-hmm. I thought that was just so unbelievably fascinating. So I think this podcast, whether or not it's going to be like that, I think it will be a really good balance of getting people like us who know way too much about the show will be interested in it. And then people like my family or like my mom who want to listen to podcasts, but like ours are a little too inside baseball. It feels like a really healthy middle ground of those. Mm-hmm.
And I made a very obnoxious Patreon podcast comparison to Marvel movies and why you should put a small budget movie out the same time a Marvel movie comes out. So if you want to become patron, patreon.com/survivorspecialist. I'm not going to do it again because it literally just kept going on and Alexa started rolling her eyes, even though you can't hear that. Also patreon.com/peridium. There you go. So we dropped them both immediately. Yes. But I do feel so. A lot of people are like, "Oh, this is going to change the podcast game."
Honestly, maybe
I don't think it's going to change anything.
No, Phil hasn't slept because he is concerned the podcast game has changed.
Like, I don't feel threatened. I don't think Rob feels threatened. I don't think Alexa feels threatened. I don't think Johnny feels threatened. I don't think anybody who's been making these podcasts feels threatened.
What if Probe started doing what I do? Started copying my style?
Would you feel threatened?
Top five most robbed Survivor players from Jeff Probst's perspective.
You know what I would notice though is if he did start doing that and he made videos like that, you'd probably be the one making them for him. And congratulations on getting whatever pay cut they're going to give you for that.
I was just saying, I thank my lucky stars. I don't have anyone above me telling me what to say or do. I don't know how it would look with Jeff above me right now, like telling me what to put in these videos.
The five best Robs that ever played Survivor.
Top 10 Boston Rob confessionals, moments that he destroyed the newbies, top times he stared at Jeff Probst and Probst stared back.
I'd watch it.
I just think, like you said there, what is he going to want you to put in these videos? I think that's the biggest takeaway from this, right? And I said to Alexa, we're not going to lose our listeners because of this. Rob's not going to lose his listeners because of this. Really, this just creates more content to
Peridium
take in.
May be losing his listeners to this.
I mean, if anything, I'm looking forward to it just because I don't know for sure. Like a lot of Survivor is shrouded in mystery because we only get 42 minutes a week. And even with the postseason, it's currently been clamped down a lot. So we're getting even less than we normally would. So like behind the scenes footage is juicy. I find it quite juicy sometimes. And it's coming from the guy, the brain of the entire operation. So I'm like, a part of me thinks this is going to be he's not going to be very candid. But the other part of me says, well, we'll see. I remember watching his behind the scenes Survivor China. He's got those on YouTube. I own every single pre-HD season on DVD. There's a lot of great behind the scenes stuff and producer commentary and whatnot. So this is just like the newest era of behind the scenes Jeff Probst spilling his thoughts. He always loves to talk. He wants a microphone. Mm-hmm. I know he used to write like a blog every week. Yep. Those are still out there on the Wayback Machine if you ever want to find like Jeff Probst's weird edited thoughts on the show, on the latest episodes. But yeah, this is Jeff Probst's podcast. This is going to be an interesting time.
And I think the nice thing about it is it's going to bring more people to the podcast world because now it's going to be promoted on CBS. So like my parents might be like, ooh, a podcast. And then maybe they'll finally acknowledge that we do this, Alexa. But you know, I think that it will more than anything maybe create more credibility for us. I mean, he called us out by name. He said, this won't be a recap podcast. There's a lot of great recap podcasts out there. And he was talking about us specifically.
He said the specialists? He said
No. But I read between
Phil,
the lines.
Just,
who else would he have been talking about?
If you actually read the article, you see P as the first letter, H as the second letter, I-L.
If we said specialist, do you think he might get you confused with like Philip by any chance?
Yeah.
Okay.
Philip
okay,
actually has the more successful.
He does have the better podcast. But I think this shows that Jeff still really cares. And people can give him a hard time for this podcast or not or whatever. And maybe it's a desperate play of like, we need to find a way to get more people to actually watch the show consistently. And this podcast will make them want to stay on top of it and relevant and whatever, so they can hear the behind the scenes right after they watch it. But whether that's the case or not, Jeff in his 60s is willing to take on a new thing when Jeff could literally have this show end tomorrow and he would disappear into the sunset and have the best life ever for the next 30 years of his life. It wouldn't matter. Like he could go travel the world, do whatever he wants. But Jeff is still willing to go out of his way to do this kind of thing.
Right.
And I think that's good. And I'm shocked it took them so long to do this because I'm with you. Dalton Ross used to do a podcast or whatever he used to do. It wasn't really a podcast, but it was like a show on EW. Dalton Ross does questions with Jeff every week. Jeff used to do his little blogs on jeffprobst.com, which never took off. This seems like a no-brainer because why would it not take off?
The Jeff Probst show. Yeah,
the Jeff Probst show. Exactly. Like, so I'm surprised it took so long for them to do this. And I'm kind of happy that they are.
I've never really made a video centered on him, even though he's kind of the center of the show in many ways. Like, he's the consistent. So it's I've always appreciated that Jeff cares about the show a lot, even if I don't always agree with the decisions he's choosing to make the newest season like super interesting. But I do still count, like, I'm grateful for the fact that we have somebody who cares, because there are other shows that I watch where I'm like, this person is clearly just phoning it in. They're just writing, they just, you know, write him a check and they're out. Jeff doesn't feel that way. I mean, he's the brainchild of the whole thing. And as long as he's interested, I'm feeling like the show's going to be around. It's once Jeff loses steam, I don't know. Where does Jeff go to vacation when he retires? Does he go to Fiji?
Does he go to
Marquesas? Goes back there.
I think he just goes and takes a nap. Yeah, do you think he goes?
Just takes a nap for a long time.
Boston Rob gave his Godfather confessional at, and he just stares at the tree and like a little tear rolls down his eye. You think that's what happens?
Maybe.
That's it. No, but I am of the camp that Survivor ends when Jeff is. I cannot imagine. Phil, you asked me earlier, like, what would make you not watch Survivor? I don't know if I genuinely don't think I could watch Survivor without Jeff.
I think I could because I watch Australian Survivor, which I know Phil doesn't, which he should. I don't know why he doesn't. Phil, why don't you watch?
He's a very good host.
It's too much, man. It's just too much.
Too much Survivor? Overdose?
Too much Survivor. I think everything there's too much. There's too much everything. There's too many NFL games. That's why I love the NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah, 16 isn't too many. 17, I actually am okay with the NFL. I can't stand like hockey and NBA. There's so many games. I can't keep up.
I had a moment yesterday though.
Sports.
No, but this is okay. We're recording this on Monday. I had a moment yesterday where I said to my wife, "Man, I feel so relieved that there's no football today." Because a lot of my job, my real job, involves like writing about football and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I am so relieved there's none. Yesterday was like the first Sunday I felt free, because last Sunday I was actually doing something else. Like I was away at work. So this was like the first Sunday and I was like, what is missing that is making me feel so relieved? And it was football. So I think there's too much football. And that's the same thing with Survivor. When we tried to do new stuff during COVID, it felt like work. When me and Alexa sit down on a Wednesday, it doesn't feel like work. When we sit down and talk to like Castaways, it doesn't really feel like work, where Alexa just looked up at the sky, so maybe it feels like work to her, but it doesn't feel like work to me. Where I think that's where, like, if I'm watching Australian Survivor and American Survivor, and then what else, like, am I gonna watch South African Survivor? It just starts to feel like a lot, where I like just once a week, 13 weeks or 26 weeks a year.
I get it. No, I agree. Yeah, there are definitely times where I felt that over the years. I focus on just the US versions and most of my channel is like that, but there are definitely like three episodes a week. Like I haven't watched this week's Australian Survivor. I'm always a few episodes behind, unfortunately. So I do often get spoiled on the boots, but like it does sometimes feel like a lot. And it's like, you know, there are times in my life where I don't have as much free time to devote to like three different versions of the same show.
Right.
Yeah.
But you do bring up a good point. I mean, Australian Survivor and South African Survivor, they are famously not hosted by Jeff, but I think in my head, I know I'm watching a quote unquote different show. I think American Survivor is so wrapped up, has a negative connotation, but American Survivor is Jeff. And I think even if you took a bunch of people with Australian accents and put them on American Survivor, it would still feel like American Survivor.
With Jeff Probst.
With Jeff.
Yeah.
So, and with that, he's come out and said that he is lit for this upcoming season. It is, I think he used the word electric, which is a very fun word. He's really excited for this season. I don't really know how he's spoken about 41, 42, and 43 in the preseason, but he seems to feel extremely strongly about this season, which I'm definitely excited about and feeling something to say.
Pretty. I have to jump in here.
What to make with Jeff's preseason hype though, to be fair.
Well, here's, do you remember what is the most hyped season Jeff's ever had?
Worlds Apart? Worlds Apart? No.
Redemption Island.
Was that number one? Wow. Okay.
And now I don't know if that was his favorite season, but I remember when that season was coming out, he was saying, this is a top five season of all time.
Oh, it's I remember.
Incredible. Blah. And it is garbage. So I don't know what to make of that, because I also, Alexa and I really liked 43, Peridium. I don't know if you liked 43, but Jeff clearly hated 43. And so maybe that's why he just feels good about 44. Remember, Nicaragua was a disaster. So at least he got to watch his man win in 22. Maybe that's why he loved it so much. But I liked 43 a lot. I hope 44 is very good, but I don't put much into what Jeff says as like preseason hype because of Redemption. He lost all credibility with that, with Redemption Island.
Yeah, I would say like kind of equating it to, and this is, I know you don't watch Big Brother. It's not a Big Brother podcast, but I will say there are many ways to watch the show Big Brother, and I will have a different experience. Like a lot of my favorite seasons, I didn't watch the live feeds for most of my favorite Big Brother seasons. And then the ones that I did watch the live feeds, I have a better picture of, and I've sort of lowered my estimation of them for whatever reason by sheer coincidence. So I wonder if Jeff Probst, like being on the island, watching it play out live, greatly affect like his opinion of the season itself. Also the editing, Jeff doesn't have the editing influence his decisions, his opinions when he's ultimately saying it's the best. He doesn't know what the season's going to look like. I also think there's something like the community online for us super fans like definitely helps dictate a little bit of the opinion. Like if I don't like an episode or a player or a season, but the community at large loves it, it's like maybe I'm missing something, and I start to try and like mold my opinion to try to understand that. So like, yeah, in Jeff's case, I think his preseason hype for me is a grab bag of like quotes. It's like, okay, it's electric. I'm hoping it's really good because it also means that we have a good season of Survivor and I can trust Jeff's word a little bit. That's a win-win, but we have been burned before. So
And now that we know that he's doing this podcast, I also wonder how much of this hype is coming from the fact that they're trying something new. And I said to Alexa on the Patreon podcast, this is the first time I would say that Survivor is going 100% new on something since probably Second Chances. Now, I know Edge of Extinction was there, but that was just kind of a ripoff a little bit of Redemption Island. This Second Chances was, we're going to let people vote to get players in. And whether our votes actually mattered or not, there was that illusion at least that made that really cool. And this is something new that they're trying. They haven't done anything in another media format since they've introduced Ponderosa. And so I'm really excited about that. And I wonder how much of Jeff saying how much he loves this season is because he also is very excited about this new idea. Because like you said, Jeff always kind of wanted to be a talk show host. He ended up being a reality TV show host, but he wanted to be Rob Cesternino. That's kind of the craziest part of the whole thing. And so I think that he might just be really amped about that. And that might be adding to his joy, because for the first time, maybe since he turned the big 5-0, Jeff might be doing something very new and very fun that's more up his alley with this show.
Maybe. We'll find out. We'll see. Do we know when his podcast is coming out every week? Is it like the next
week? I was just wondering that. Oh, right after the episode?
Yeah, he said it'll be Wednesday nights.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Wow, my Wednesday nights just got even busier.
Did you see his interview? He did a podcast with Billy Boyd, the Hobbits from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Yep.
Did you listen to that at all? Or
that was Alexa, you were referencing it.
He's got some wild takes on there, like Jeff. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I can't believe I'm saying this. I saw Jeff on a TikTok. Didn't see anything. I didn't see the spicy content. I just saw, I think it was the question was, what are the most bingeable seasons?
He did a good job with that. That was a good answer. I was almost like, it's like, that's like my video from 5 years ago. I'm like, he's giving off my top five. There's a thing in one of their, the finale of Edge of Extinction where they reference stats. And I'm like, I just referenced that stat like 2 weeks ago. Is that from my video? Because I've never heard anyone reference that stat before. I don't want to have a big head here, but there are times
congratulations.
Where I'm like side-eyeing. I'm like, is Jeff listening? I hope, I don't
hey.
Know. Hey. I'll take it.
I think Jeff has probably dabbled in all of this stuff at least.
I think he has. I don't know for sure. I've never gotten confirmation from anyone at CBS that they know about me or you or anybody. Well, I know they know about Rob Cesternino, and there's some great quotes with Jeff and Rob, some great clips. But yeah,
we know about Fair Play, right? Because they chatted.
I mean, yeah, the former players for sure. We're just like, who are we? He doesn't know us at all. But
it gives us hope, though. I mean, yeah, I didn't watch that podcast, but I'm not surprised like that. Jeff, I really want to
hear these saucy takes.
I really think though, like that is something where Jeff. People aren't giving Jeff enough credit. I give Jeff so much shit, but I really like Jeff. Like Jeff is the show. Like you said, it's just, he's getting older. I mean, he's in his 60s and like how long
I'm sure is he going to be able love, to. Do you think he's listening right now? And he's like, thank God they're reminding me of my age.
Yeah. But
he said it like five times.
I'm giving him an out. I'm going to pat him on the back with this because I think that he is doing more. I think it took them a little bit for COVID to be done and kind of behind them. Mm-hmm. And now it's, how can we spice this up and make this fun again, Jeff? What can we do? And I think Jeff, despite his age, is so into trying to be fun and do fun things. Mm-hmm. And we might not agree with all of his takes, because we certainly don't. Like, there's a lot of stuff that he has said that is just outlandish. But I think that he is like, it almost feels like after season 19, when he was about to quit and there's challenges where he's not there, and then Heroes Villains happen, and he was like, I'm back, baby. And then it was the cursed years of 21 mm-hmm. to 24 of just pure mm-hmm. shit. I feel like he's gotten almost like a rebirth. And I don't know mm-hmm. if that's from casting. I don't know if that's from like what's happening on the island. I don't know if that's from having a different kind of type of winner. The last mm-hmm. seasons, all three of those winners are really unique.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's helped him or changed it, but I feel like Jeff is just, he wants to be a, it feels like he has the energy he had back at the beginning all of a sudden. And I don't know where mm-hmm. that came from.
Is it because he's just turned into a grandfather, maybe? I don't know what his life is like outside the show, either. But he feels like Grandpa Probst. He's gone from like stubborn dad Probst to like Grandpa yeah. Probst. He's like, yeah. I'm just here to have a fun time at this point. Just like yeah. throw idols in cages and make them like fight to the death for them. And, you know.
And for what it's worth, like, that is kind of what we need. The show's been on for 44 freaking seasons. Yeah. Like, we kind of need just like overexcitement. And I'm really excited for the idol caged idol. I think that's a twist that isn't like game breaking by any means, but is fun. And it's something that people are pretty much doing anyway. It's just making you be a little more real about it. And I really like that.
It's flipping the concept of the hidden immunity idol. It's no longer hidden. Mm-hmm. Like at all. Like usually, I mean, to be fair, you could argue jokingly that they were never very well hidden in the first place. When you see Rick Devens finding him literally for like four straight episodes, Ben finds him every episode. But in this case, no, they're right there for anyone. I don't know how it's going to work exactly or what that's going to mean for like the tribe dynamic. But I'm also curious to know if they're going to be like beware advantages. You know, like is there a downside beyond the social mm-hmm. ramifications of grabbing an idol in plain sight? Like, are you losing a vote? Do you know, mm-hmm. is there a punishment? Because I don't think there should be personally. I've never thought there should be, but I do wonder.
Yeah, I wonder because now, I mean, we even saw it a bit with 43 where people knew about Beware Advantages. And I think people mm-hmm. know that there is, I'm going to use like a script for the way, like they know that when it's mm-hmm. at this tribal, they're going to divide into two different tribes after the merge. And I think they have to stop that because the players are getting too smart for it now. So if there are beware advantages, I think they're going to have to be even more subtle than they were with the beads. Mm. And they're going to have to either start phasing them out or making them very different for 45 and 46.
Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to see what happens with 44 in this new twist, but I'm really curious to see where they're going to go with 45 and 46. And like these last three seasons have been, like 41 was a huge 180 from the previous era, I think, of the show. And it was very distinctly its own beginning. Like Jeff really did drill in like the drop the four, keep the one or whatever, mm-hmm. except it was more like, I don't know, keep the four and the one. Cause this is a completely new era of the show. And I'm like, okay, what's the direction? Cause I feel like more than ever, the 30s were really just like, here's a new theme. But it was still kind of the same thing mm-hmm. with 41, 42, 43, and now 44. It looks like they're really trying to mix it all up. And I'm like, how many different ways can they slice this cake, I guess, is mm-hmm. what I'm curious to see. Like, they can't do, like, I've heard that they're possibly going to do a tribe swap this season, which is mm-hmm. cool. We've seen that. Wow. We've seen that a lot. I don't know for sure. Obviously, it hasn't happened. But we've seen that a lot in the history of the show. But we haven't seen it happen in, like, this new version of the Survivor 26 days, really fast. Three tribes of six. Beware advantages, whatever's happening. They do the split final 10 tribal. Like, mm-hmm. are they going to do split final 8 tribal instead? Do they do a split final 6? Do they change the merge up again? They switch the earn the merge from 41 to 42 to 43 and 44, which I also like the changes they've made. I think they kind of improved upon 41 and 42 with 43. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm just like, what are they going to do? Like, how many different ways can they slice this?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
And I think what's cool about them doing the cage in 44 is the people who are going out for 44 can't have even caught a glimpse of that from 43. Yeah. Because what happens a lot, they won't see the whole season, or they don't see the season before they go out and play or anything like that. But I do think that like doing something different in the back end, right? Because I'm trying to think, the people who go out to play, what are they in? They're in season when they go, like if you were to leave to go play 45, mm-hmm. they're shooting 44. So maybe not. I was going to say, it's kind of cool because like then the people who are going to play 45 can't even prepare for the cage, but now they all know about the cage.
So no, they'll be able to see. I think they're going to get at least half the season or something.
So you almost have to do it at the beginning. But I will say this. I like that after 41 and 42, they seem too scared between 41 and 42 to completely change something that was very unpopular, which was the earn the merge and you know, whatever. They were too scared to completely change it. They tried to move it around a little bit, but they didn't completely change it. Mm-hmm. I think that what they did with 43 and now doing this idle cage in 44, it's showing that they're a little bit more willing to change the script on the fly. Or maybe they already had this plan, but they're more willing to put something new in rather than just doing an exact replica of the previous season. Because 41 and 42, the only way I can tell them apart is that 41 is terrible. That's the only that's the only way I can tell them apart. Because they're almost the exact same.
And that's just objective, obviously, you know.
Of course.
No, it's obviously. It's obviously. The one thing about Survivor that's not subjective is that 41 is terrible.
But as someone who is a Netflix fan, and I'm currently rewatching Ko Rong. Which is not even that long ago, mm-hmm. I feel some way about every single player, pre-merge players, post-merge players. And I like Survivor, but I don't, a lot of players in the new era can feel very like you're in and you're out with them. And
to be fair, I will say Ko Rong has like a pretty strong cast. In my objective opinion.
Yes. Ko Rong is a top 10 season.
I would. I do think it is a top 10 season, personally. I know people don't, not everyone loves it, but I do.
I agree with that. So, but I think these post heroes versus villains seasons that aren't in the new era, like Ko Rong, David versus Goliath, like Kageon, these really strong casts, or strong seasons, they are, because the casts, they are a result of strong casts. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's so much like emphasis on casting in these newer seasons, but it's just not translating, because I don't know if we're getting less camp life, where I saw a really good Reddit thread about why there aren't any villains. And I think villains are sort of being washed out anyway, mm-hmm. but we're not seeing much camp life. And that's where people get in fights. That's when a villain is born or like a victim is born. We're not getting that. So I don't really get the opportunity to feel a way about a player.
I do think Shan was a pretty big villain looking back.
Absolutely. She was,
she was a huge favorite before she became a villain. That's
she was a huge favorite. Right?
But I liked that. Like that was awesome. I love seeing people turn. That's great.
I think what's interesting is I almost think Ko Rong might have been the turning point for it. And that was
Survivor.
When you became a villain with Scott and Jason, it started to impact your real life too much. If you really were just like abhorrent on the show, and Scott and Jason are so abrasive on that season. People don't realize Jason probably could have won that game if he made it to the final three. Scott never was going to win, but they were so abrasive on that show. But back in season two, Jerry Manthe was abrasive, and she's in Playboy. That was the difference to me, is like villains were treated in a different light. Remember, in Heroes versus Villains, the interesting characters are on the villains tribe. I mean, let's be real. We were all dying to see what was going to happen between Tyson and Coach and Courtney and Russell and Boston Rob. That was where the drama was at, not over with Rupert stubbing his toe and whining about it.
I mean, watch Australian Survivor Heroes versus Villains. You got the exact same situation. Yeah. It's like, and the editors know it. They give all the time in the world to the villains on that. I know you haven't seen it, Phil. Are you watching it, by the way?
I have not watched the current season.
Well, now, I will say, if you're wondering who's like more interesting to watch, it is like 95% of the time they go to the villains camp for the interesting stuff. It's the same thing. Like villains, it's sort of what Survivor was started as. Like it's all about the conflict of all these clashing personalities. Mm-hmm. And I do think that starting with Millennials, Gen X onward, and also in this new era of the show, it's a little bit less confrontational in some ways. I think they try to make it sometimes feel like, you know, they're arguing over papaya or whatever. Mm-hmm. That isn't as juicy, I think, as what we've seen in the past with older seasons of the show. Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, sure. So like, Yeah, I do miss that a little bit. That's for sure. I the characterization, and I think a lot of it is because they're trying to slice Survivor in so many different directions with Do or Die and Choose Your Champion and Earn the Merge and the Beware Advantages with the wacky phrases and the beads. There's a whole multiple scenes of the same thing over and over and over with the beads. And you could say they do that with finding the idols. They have to, but the idol finds don't take nearly as much time because you find the idol, you get the idol. And I can't believe I'm saying this because I used to complain a lot. Like, we just get the same idol finding scenes over and over in the older seasons. And it gets a little repetitive, like Exile Island. It gets repetitive. They go to Exile. They sit there. They stare at the ocean. Do we need to see that for more than 30 seconds? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I do feel like there's a little bit of that with the modern era where they're really focusing on the game and the twists and how the producers are twisting it in any direction. And then they try to like compensate with like the background story packages that they're editing in. And you don't like that? Do you guys not like those at all?
You know what it is? So I like them in 41. I like everybody's story, right? Like, I want everybody to get their story told. Mm-hmm. It all feels the exact same. I feel like what's happened is like, I have a hard time. And this is why I think between like 41 and 42, I have a hard time. Like, wait, which season was this person on? Wait, which season was this person on? Which I've never had that problem in my life. But I feel like a lot of the backstories are the same. I mean, you could even go to like when you look at like Jesse and Carla's big redemption arcs or like, you know, whatever their backstories were, it was, I started in a bad place. I went to one of the premier institutions in America and now I'm doing great. And it sounds
good,
like
they all did go to like Ivy League school. They're like, really
yeah. I mean,
schools.
She went to Berkeley. It's not an Ivy League school because it's not on the right coast. That's the only reason. Sure. Berkeley's amazing. And so I just think like it's starting to feel very similar. And that almost takes away from the gravity of a really good one. Like Jesse's last season, when he's breaking down crying, realizing like I didn't win this for my family, and we knew what he went through, it hits. Like I was crying when I'm watching that because I felt for that guy. I really liked him. But for everybody to have that same kind of, can we get a crying backstory? Can we get like a sob story? It shouldn't be like that. Russell Hantz never had one. And Russell Hantz, I don't care what anybody
says.
Well,
he did. It was just a lie.
Yeah, and he's probably the most popular.
You don't remember his dog? Wasn't his dog named Rocky?
His dog Rocky was on the roof and he had to go up there and pull him off and all that. You know? I mean, it's great.
That was heartbreaking.
But I can't believe I'm going to say this because you just mentioned Russell. But I think what the show needs to go back to a little bit, because they're casting very well right now. But I think the one thing they need to cast more of are sociopaths. I don't think they put enough sociopaths on the show anymore. I'm serious though, because a sociopath on Survivor who literally does not care about what the fan reaction is going to be at home.
Brian Heidecks.
Where's Brian Heidecks? Where's Corinne? Like, seriously, these are great TV characters who were polarizing in the moment, but also brought a different dynamic to the game that we're not seeing.
Sydney on 41 had a bit of that.
She did and she didn't. I don't think it was developed.
We didn't enough of her, yeah. I think we need I don't know if I need a sociopath on TV, but like a balance. We need people who want to go out there and people who are going to go out there and like be a villain because they're a mean person. Like, I don't want someone, because right now someone's going to go out and I want to do this and I don't want you to plan what you want to be. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to be a jerk, like you might just be a jerk. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'll watch that. Mm-hmm. I'm okay. And I will not like it, but I'll enjoy it for the entertainment value because it's real. Mm-hmm. Scott and Jason, I could not stand watching Scott. I found Jason to be really complicated. I loved that. Mm-hmm. But that's what I appreciated about them. And when they lost, that made me so much happier.
I do think I've been trying to like define the latest era right now, even though only three seasons deep into it. I do wonder like how long will this last? When will they do a major shift? They definitely did a major shift after Winners at War. I do think it was partially as a response to Island of the Idols. Mm-hmm. That was my theory. I was interviewed after Island of the Idols, which I don't often get interviewed by like magazines or whatever, but they interviewed me looking for like thoughts. And I was like, I do think we haven't seen it because I don't know what's happening. This was after Island of the Idols had happened. And I was like, I think we're going to see a big shift somehow. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I definitely think we're going to after what we got. Mm-hmm. I do feel like season 41 onward has been really trying to tap into this idea of inspiring the audience, which mm-hmm. doesn't happen in the older seasons as much. Mm-hmm. We saw a little bit of that in Winners at War with The Edge of Extinction. It's like, look how far you can push yourself, and Ethan going up and down the mountain or whatever, or the close-ups of the players. But that was also loaded with like a lot of 40 seasons of backstory of these people. So it's a little bit different. They had a lot going on, a lot on the line. I feel like with this, we're getting like a swath of just new people with very inspiring, deep stories that are, you know, not really relevant to what we're watching mm-hmm. on the show in the episode. And they sometimes don't have any relevance at all in the whole season, even in their own story beyond that's who they are. And it does sort of feel a little bit distracting and heavy. I've advocated that they should maybe try to lighten the mood a little, or just make it so that the backstories aren't so like depressing, and like mm-hmm. it's not always about like I was in a hard spot and I made it here and now I'm like thriving. It can be other things. Like I don't want to like give a lot of credit to Australian Survivor, but I do like how they do their backstories sometimes. They're like fun or funny mm-hmm. yeah. or lighthearted or like diabolical or just fantastical. And American at the moment, it's the US Survivor is mostly just like cue the piano, cue the violin. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, time to feel sad for the next 30 seconds, 60 seconds.
Yeah.
I do kind of wish there was a little bit more, I don't know, just change it up a little.
I think that's why Cody was so popular, because he...
Cody's like, was ridiculous, by the way. Just going to say, before,
yeah,
this was like, Noelle's leg is missing or whatever. And he's like, here's my sad story about my friend. And it's just like, that's an interesting way to stem from, like, he's looked at...
Yeah.
Anyway, right. I don't fault the players. Like, these are things that have happened to them that are
yeah, for sure,
clearly
for sure.
incredibly important.
Everyone's
but,
got problems.
But to your point... there are a lot, and maybe a lot more people who haven't come out on the other side and aren't like all good and love themselves and have found themselves yet. And I, mm-hmm. what I appreciate about, what I really liked about Cody and what I liked about Gabler too, was they had, you know, they had their stories. And I think especially for Gabler, like a lot of that built into his win and that built into like everything he was talking about, and so that felt very cohesive. Cody was like silly, funny, a good player, so hurt that he lost. That's what I've been watching
here today. And here's a question, right? The first, just go look at the first two seasons. Name something bad that happened in Colby's life. Name something bad that happened in Tina's life. And I'm talking about the first two seasons. Obviously, yeah, what happened with her in Blood versus Water is devastating, but I'm talking about in the first two seasons. What happened bad in Tina's life? Keith's life.
I mean, Colby went on a road trip with Jerry. That seemed pretty miserable.
That was bad. But what I'm saying is Colby was so loved in season two. Jerry was loved to be hated in season two.
Yeah.
Roger. I mean, Kentucky Joe. You had Elizabeth. None of them, we didn't know what was going on so much in their personal lives. It would come up every now and then. But we had a solid... And I always go back to this guy and I feel bad because it's so heartfelt and everything. But we had like a solid 10 minutes of Gio last season talking about his upbringing and everything like that.
Yeah.
Gio went nowhere in the game. It was irrelevant to everything. He wasn't saying it to other castaways in a way that like made it feel like, okay, he's just wanting to share this with people and he's getting closure on something. He was just telling producers. And there's that one scene in the one episode where it is seriously like 3.5-4 minutes long. And I'm okay with him getting that content, but they need to find a smoother way to do it, because that's not the, like, I'm not just necessarily inspired by that. I think about Vetus, right? Think about Vetus and Aris out there in Blood versus Water. Mm-hmm. And Aris knocks him off and Vetus starts losing it, right? Mm-hmm. And what it's like to be the older brother and grow up with the golden boy and all that. That scene is incredible. It's incredible. And it's not a confessional. And there's no piano music. But it made Vetus get enough votes to come back on Second Chances. Like, it's awesome. And I think that's what's being missed here, right? I think that it's not happening naturally. I think it's how can we make sure that all 18 of these castaways get the worst thing that happened to them out there on the screen, because that's the only way we feel the audience knows how to connect with them anymore. And I don't think that's true.
Do you have a golden child brother, Phil?
I don't. I don't know. Okay. I was the golden child. Yeah, my sister. Okay. My sister has the chip on her shoulder because I existed. So yeah, she'll tell you that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also humble. But anyway.
You're very humble, right?
All the above.
Golden God. Well, yeah, yeah. I would say I'm not totally against showing more of who the people are. I just think variety is the spice of life. And three seasons, it's sort of been a little bit of the same. I was fine with it in the first season. I thought, this is different. I said it in my review video. I'm like, you know, it's different. I'm willing to try something different. Things change. It's not the end of the world. Being different isn't bad. Yeah. It does sort of feel like it's repeating itself. And I don't even remember them mostly, the backstories, at all. I do remember it more from the older seasons. Maybe it's because I haven't rewatched 41 and 42 yet, but... Or 43. But yeah, I don't know. I'm looking forward to... this is why I'm like curious to see what they're going to do. Are they going to keep going? Maybe it's because they're trying to like go with the times and, you know, the current state of the country and whatever. You know, they're trying to be a little bit more... I don't know. I don't want to say softer, but they're trying to be more inspiring is how it feels. Yeah. And they didn't do that before. That wasn't really what Survivor... And Jeff even said in an interview, this is what I was joking about, but like one of his takes was like the most defining moment in the history of the show.
Oh, no.
And he gave his take. And it was not what I thought. Yeah, it's Sari getting across the balance beam. And I thought, if that isn't indicative of like what Jeff is thinking... And we lost Phil. Phil's gone.
Oh,
all
God,
right.
He left.
Podcast
not
is
even
over.
So, not even...
Catch on fire with Jeff Probst? No.
I feel like that... Well, actually, I would actually love to know Sari's opinion on all of this.
I think she's talked about it. She did say she liked the moment. She liked that they gave her the opportunity. But I think Jeff has made it into more of a moment than she ever thought it might have been. But she was like, you know, I was happy to get across and do it. It wasn't like the big thing for her. There is a thing where she went on RHAP and talked about it, and I remember listening to it at one point, and Jeff makes it a bigger deal, and I'm like, okay, that's sort of the vibe that I'm getting with the brain of the operation right now. And you know, I'm trying to roll with the punches.
There's so much inspiration behind Sari that it's like frustrating that that's like, the one.
Her first season, there's so many better moments than that. Her second season, there's so many better, like that is such a manufactured for TV moment. And as Ryan said last season, Alex, I gotta put you back on the right. It's driving me crazy. She's
there. Dead. I am.
Okay. But I forgot when I leave that'll happen. But as Ryan said last season, enough with the niceness. Like, I'm okay with the niceness, but reality TV is about drama. And you can have villains. I'm not saying they have to be Russell Hance, but I think, and I don't want this to be construed the wrong way, but I think what people don't realize, and I don't know if necessarily even CBS Survivor, whatever the producers realize this either, is they're trying to avoid what happened with Dan Spilo and Jeff Varner. They don't want that to ever, 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 ever happen again. The thing is, going into the season where Varner had that incident, he was incredibly popular as a snarky villain. Dan Spilo on his season wasn't anything. He wasn't a villain. He wasn't a hero. He was nothing. The problem isn't putting villains on the show. That's not what the problem is. The problem is putting people on the show who, can we trust them to not do or say something that is going to blow up everything? But Boston Rob is probably the most popular player in the history of the show, even though I just said that about whoever earlier, I can't even remember, but probably the most popular player in the history of the show. And he's a villain. So why can't we have, and I think Jesse is a villain. I really do. I think he had a great story, but I think he's a villain. And I think that was a good thing. I think Jesse started to feel more and more and more like a villain, like the old school villain where you still wanted them to win the game.
He's kind of like an anti-hero. They were cutthroat. He's like an anti-hero. Like, he's got a little bit of good and a little bit of... He's forced to do bad things. The situation he's in, it's Survivor. True. He's got to betray his number one. But you feel for him and you look up to him and you're like, damn, if I couldn't play like that, if I was to play on Survivor, that's what I would be like.
Yeah.
He's got a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Whereas like Russell is like pure villain. Like,
he's pure villain. But he's the extreme, right? Like Russell as a villain is more of a villain than Jeff Varner or Dan Spilo ever were. But I'm talking on the show, like in what we saw, how they played the game. But they're trying to get people to avoid being Varner and Spilo, not avoid being Russell.
Yeah, don't be problematic. That's kind
exactly.
of like, we don't want, a villain. We don't want problems. We just want to have fun and like be cheeky about it, you know? Yeah. It's a game. Keep it in the confines of the game.
Mm-hmm. I think people with...
That's a good... Keep it in the confines of the game.
Keep it in the confines of the game is great. Right. But I think people with social media and all that are a little bit more scared and timid to go out there and be villainous, because say one thing that's misconstrued by somebody who tweets it and it gets retweeted and all that, all of a sudden, like, people are sending you death threats and whatever. I mean, Tommy got death threats and Tommy didn't say anything.
Sounds like you're not advocating for Survivor to have live feeds, Phil.
I don't want live feeds. I don't want live feeds. Because
No live feeds? Okay.
No, I don't want to be watching.
I would actually love Survivor live.
Anti-live feeds.
I am pro live feeds. I think I would want that.
But I also think, like, I think Survivor in 42 minutes, we have seen over and over again how good it can be. Mm-hmm. Like somebody like Wardog, who went out there, I think he might be the last villain we ever truly had on the show. Like, he was a villain. He was more villainous, for sure.
He was not a villain. He was not portrayed in like a super positive light.
Who didn't love watching Wardog play? Him voting out Kelly Wentworth, whether it made sense or not, is a great moment. I mean, it's awesome. But he was willing to do that, and he didn't care what the reaction was going to be, because if you ever meet Wardog in real life, very nice guy, really loved Survivor, loved the fan community during that season, was all over the place. Right. And I think that that is where can you differentiate those two things? Wardog wasn't worried about coming back and people hating him because he knew he could separate his real life from the game. Where do we start finding players like that? Because I don't think we've had one in 41, 42, or 40.
I mean, I will say, I do think there's a lot of conflict between Shannon and Deshaun, which I found somewhat captivating. I loved the confessional of Deshaun. He's like crying in the rain and he's like super conflicted. He doesn't know what to do and how it's going to be perceived. And he's trying to juggle like the perception, which to be fair is like what you're complaining about. Like, you don't want people to be so worried about the perception. Mm-hmm. That was a little bit heavier, to be fair. And I do
think that was
the context of the country going into 41 was a lot different than say any season prior to it. So maybe that's a little bit, maybe it's a little bit of a loaded situation, but still I did find that to be quite interesting. And maybe that's like one of the only times it's a lot heavier than say 42 or 43. The villainous stuff on 42, we didn't get to see or talk about because the CBS doesn't want to talk about it. So we can't go into that too much. But there's definitely like things that happened. But 42 on some levels was considered universally more liked and better than 41. And there were no villains. There weren't that many villains on the show, on the edit that we saw. People really weren't. They were kind of like watered down.
They were grasping at straws too. Like the Twitter world was grasping at straws for like, why is Jonathan evil?
Oh yeah, I don't even think about Jonathan's edit or whatever. He was kind of an afterthought so much of the time, and he wasn't really that great at the game. And
I
think because like in 42 there weren't villains, but 42 was really silly. Like the winner was a very silly winner. Omer was diabolical but kept making like weird bird puns. Jonathan, for what it's worth, like wasn't like the strategic mastermind we're used to seeing, but he had an awesome confessional about how he eats 18 eggs every single day.
Yeah.
Like that, people don't talk about that stuff anymore. And someone who's that huge goes on the show. He made me like watching challenges. Mm. That was enough for me. And him and Lindsay having their tension, and like those characters were, I just remember a lot more about them. Like Shan, I remember Shan. I remember Ricard. Erica, this is not her fault.
Well, I mean, she's given barely nothing, on the season, so.
Yeah. Which is a waste. That was terrible. Like Erica, Heather, even Tiffany, who we've spoken to, and she is a hoot and a half. That did not really get there. It didn't fully get there.
I think it's
there.
The twist in 41. Yeah. They're too egregious. They take up too much time. The cast wasn't bad. I actually don't think the cast of the new eras are very bad. I think they're just somewhat suffocated by all of these wacky things that come out of the woodworks that I'm I don't know if I need like them betting on the last gasp challenge in last season. They don't need that. The challenge itself was so interesting in itself. Like, you just bring back an old classic challenge, you're going to have good TV.
It's that
simple. You don't need to make a new twist around it. But
And yeah. I think what I completely agree with that. And I, going back to what Phil said about casting sociopaths, I think in the amount of seasons that we've had, I think that the perfect type of person we need cast is someone who knows about the show, but doesn't know a lot about the show. Mm-hmm. Like Noelle was like one of the quieter players from this past season. doesn't give me huge Supervan vibes. Like, definitely watches Survivor and knew what was up, but like wasn't a quote unquote good enough player that I assume she knows a lot about the strategy. And I liked that. Like, I want people to be sloppy.
Yeah. And you brought up Ricard. Ricard definitely was going into that villain role, but I also think that that season needed the hero. And once Shan really went full villain, Ricard kind of slipped into the, remember when I like killed everybody on my tribe and now I'm just going to wash my hands over here and I'm just going to fold my arms and like, you're going to root for me. Like, but I think he was probably more of a villain. But Alexa, you bring up a good point with all that. I think about Dave versus Goliath, which is one of everybody's favorite seasons for the most part. Somebody like Carl, who came off as the godfather and all that stuff, he didn't really watch Survivor before he went out there. Mm-hmm. But he understood the game enough once he got there of being competitive and what he needed to do to play that he was a captivating character. Same thing with Alec Merlino and Kara and Mike White loved the game, but he also was an interesting, different kind of personality. Johnny Mundo, like, you know, you had a really diverse group of Survivor knowledge on that season. And I think that's a good thing. But one thing I want to ask before I forget about it is when Alexa, you were talking about Lindsay and Jonathan and how like you liked their feuding, and I love their feuding. I wanted that so bad going into that season, and we ended up getting it. Do you feel that players, because Lindsay and Jonathan, on a season that really didn't have villains, like we said, it really like all over the internet was, are you team Lindsay? Are you team Jonathan? And then it was like, if you're team one, let's start bringing in personal life and stuff like that. Do you think that because of that, people are a little bit warier of like butting heads with each other? Because they're worried that like by butting heads with one person, it's going to become not just the he said, she said in the game, but also then all of a sudden, let's dig up past things to talk about why this person's wrong in this instance on an island that happened 6 months ago.
Are we talking to Alexa there?
Either one. I don't care. Okay. I mean, I might have just overworded that
I think like the TLDR, I think people are nervous to say things on TV, and I don't blame them for it. Like I think that's like the problem that I like don't want to be talking about. Like they probably don't maybe they cast villains who don't want to be villains because they don't want to be referred on social media. And I like that sucks. Like that just totally sucks. Mm. I don't care for that. Like that is like a flaw in society that is ruining a part of the game that I love. I'm not sure if you have anything else on that podium, but I have a couple questions about like the format of 44.
I don't know if I have too many thoughts on that at the moment. You need people who are willing to be bold and not too worried about it. And also with Survivor, they edit it all, so it's even harder to tell what's going to be shown and what isn't, or like how they're going to misconstrue it or construe it. That's another thing that's like different from Big Brother, where with the live feeds, if we get the live feeds, you can kind of piece together everything in a timely manner, and it's very contextualized. Whereas Survivor, the more I dig into it, the more I'm left not sure like what is even being said. And they'll throw together confessionals that are like not even a sentence, that sound like a sentence. And so it's like, yeah, it's tough. I've heard some people say on one hand they're more interested in playing Survivor because of that. They don't have to worry. It's not in their hands. And then other people say the opposite. They're not worried about it. They'd rather play Survivor because they don't really mind if the producers have full control over like their perception and their portrayal.
I'd almost rather be Big Brother, because I feel like if you go with Survivor, well, I'm just saying, because if you go on Big Brother and you don't say anything offensive or anything like that, it's fine. But like if you go on Survivor and you become kind of the whoever Jerry, they're going to portray as the villain, or you're the dunce, or you're just whatever. I mean, they were giving Mike Turner Dodo music, and Mike Turner finished second place on that season. And like, that can't happen in Big Brother, because we know everything he's doing. And I think, you know, even Gabler, I mean, his early season edit was atrocious. I mean, he looked like a buffoon.
Yes.
And he ended up winning the game. And I think that's where I'd almost rather Big Brother, because, you know, like in the Jonathan Lindsay thing, we see their feud. We see what they're saying to each other. We see the argument. But like, you don't know if like your big burn or your big resolution moment is actually going to be shown. So it could just be cut in the middle of an argument that makes you look horrible. But you know that three sentences later, you guys were hugging and saying it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely would prefer people to be more open and just be themselves. Don't feel too candid or not candid, too closed off, because they're worried they're going to be portrayed a certain way. On Survivor, I would, if I were to ever play, I wouldn't worry about that because I just know it's not in my control at the end of the day. Like, yeah. I've spent too much time digging into the details of these seasons, these episodes, to know that they can do whatever they want. And people online will say, oh, they can't. Oh, no, they can. They can very easily turn you into a nobody or turn you into the most monstrous person. You don't even have to say it. They can take things out of context. They can make things look really bad, change things, the timeline. So I'm like, I just wouldn't worry about it too much, to be honest. But I understand that there's like ramifications, especially if you're trying to use it as like a springboard. So you need to be like, you know, but they used to do that 30 years, 30 seasons ago. They would cast actors who were looking to model actors who were looking to use the show as, you know, an entrance into Hollywood or whatever. And, you know, that didn't work out for literally any of them, but it was worth it was worth a shot. And you would think like they're probably thinking like, you know, I don't know. I'm not terribly worried about people worrying about perception. That is definitely more of a Big Brother thing, I think, because the live feeds definitely show you everything, warts and all. And so like, on one hand, you have context for these villainous things that happen. But on the other hand, it's like very easy to whip up into a frenzy because you have so much. There's just a nonstop 24/7, you know, data stream of everything being said and recorded. So it's tricky. Yeah. And with so many people watching, you get so many opinions and thoughts, and you can cut things and interpret things so many different ways. On Survivor, it's a little more cut and dry. If they're putting Dodo music on top of you, you're probably going to look, be perceived kind of dumb.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's not so many ways you can take that happening. If somebody does something stupid, they're not going to be able to like say, well, actually there's context here that makes you look really smart. It's like, there's no footage of that. So yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't worry too much about it if I was playing Survivor, but.
Well, that's what I liked about Mike. He had a lot of Dodo music, and then he was like, well, yeah, that's exactly how that went.
Roll with the punches.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Alexa, before we jump into 44, because I know you said that, I'm hoping that with Jeff's podcast that he's putting out and all that, I hope that it starts to have people give these players the benefit of the doubt a little bit more. Once they get a little peek behind the curtain with what's going on with production and why they make certain decisions and all that, I hope it allows for the players to get the benefit of the doubt, because you see a lot of hate spewed at players over stuff where like it's totally out of their control. Mm-hmm. And I hope that Jeff's podcast kind of brings some of that to light, because I think that will ultimately be a good thing for this new era of Survivor. Because I'll tell you what, I would love to have played in the first 20 seasons of Survivor. I'd have a hard time with 41, 42, and 43, and I have a pretty thick skin. Like I don't get bothered by much. But it's one thing, like Bradley always said to me when he went out for Ghost Island, he's like, dude, it's one thing to say you have a thick skin. It's another thing when you're literally just being hammered all the time and it's not stopping. Like, it's just hard. And
I mean,
you
know, I've seen Dreams still gets shit on.
That's true.
Dreams from Survivor 14.
Yao Man was just so lovable.
But it's ridiculous. I went on his Instagram like a couple months ago and I was like, oh my gosh, like people really just.
Oh, that's awful.
But I'm like, I'm sure he's not that bothered. It's so used to it. I mean, I will say being in front of YouTube comments with the Survivor community, sometimes you get colorful comments that come out of the woodwork, and sometimes they're personal, and it's like, you just kind of accept it. You're like, I don't know. Maybe what are they really trying to say? Are they just being toxic? Should I shadow ban them? Should I delete the comment? I don't know. You can't obviously do that too well on social media, like Twitter or whatever. You could mute people, I guess. I don't know. I wouldn't mind playing Survivor in today's day and age, just like I wouldn't have minded it 20 seasons ago. But I get it. I get it. I understand the frustration.
Well, all right, Alexa, you had questions about format and stuff. What do you got?
I gotta find Dreams' Instagram and follow him.
And just start putting hearts on everything he does.
Yeah, like love your work, whatever he has. No, I'm curious because you mentioned Pretium that there may or may not be a tribe swap. I'm curious, do we think that the players are almost conditioned backwards so that they know this new format front to back? Will it be more interesting if they do something as simple as a tribe swap?
I mean, I do think with the current first two seasons, I don't know for sure because they won't have seen 43. So they're not going to know the precedent. They're only working on the past two seasons. The time gap between 40 and 41 is quite significant. So you're looking at they're not just going back to 40 because that was many seasons ago. That was filmed in 2019. So now they're really looking at like 41 and 42 didn't have tribe swaps. It's the same exact setup at the onset. You've got three tribes of six. What we're seeing for the first 41, 42, and 43 is that this is allowing, you kind of need to keep the physical threats in the game because otherwise you're going to go to tribal council repeatedly. So it's sort of saving the bigger targets that would normally, could potentially get voted out early. They don't usually, it's not like how Survivor usually operates. Usually those guys go to the merge, whoever they are, the physical players, and then they get picked off. But we're seeing that, like, if you want to stay afloat, you kind of need to keep them around. If you know there's a tribe swap, they're not as important. And that's what I'm wondering. Is there, with only two seasons under their belt for 44, if there's a tribe swap, that will definitely change the meta. But I don't know if two seasons is enough for, like, the 44 cast to go out and say, like, oh, we're not going to have a tribe swap for sure. So we should definitely, like, if there's somebody in the in our tribe that will save us from winning, we'll win challenges, but we're not really working with them strategically. Like Ryan, for example, they kept him around. They probably could have kept Gio over Ryan, but I do think Ryan provided more of a physical strength, clearly. He's a big guy. He was strong. I mean, the way that he handled that merge, that's that, that ramp, if you guys remember, he was, like, hanging upside down like Spider-Man. Like, if he goes, if he gets voted out and Gio's there, I don't think Gio's doing that. And that might change the whole challenge itself. So I don't know. I don't know if the meta will change much for 44, but I don't mind the producers giving us a tribe swap and switching it up.
You know? I like the swap now. I feel like what was happening in the 30s is people were playing for the swap. So they would hit something and they would say, okay, I know that if I vote off this big, strong person on my tribe, we're going to be bailed out eventually. Like, it's not going to matter. And I think now you've hit a point where, well, we can't get rid of the strongest person on this tribe, because if we get rid of the strongest person on our tribe, we're not going to rebound from it because we're not going to swap. I think the swap every now and then, or some sort of mix up, is good for the game. Not every season, but every now and then, because what it does is it prevents people from just going in with a plan of, I'm going to vote out the strongest guys or women, whatever, or I'm going to just play until the swap, or I'm going to keep around those people and hope to be the weak person who's able to stick with those strong people. Like, I think you need to mix it up, because then people can't come in with a solidified plan. Whereas if I was going out to 43, I'd be like, well, if it's 41 and 42, like, maybe I'm playing to not, you know, it hasn't been that many seasons, so I don't know if I would have thought that way. Yeah. But, like, if now you're going out for 45 and 44 also doesn't have a swap, now you've seen two full cycles,
right,
where there's no swap. And I think that starts to become too predictable and you start planning for no swap.
I love the swap. I'm severely missing it. I don't need two swaps. I actually do not like two swaps. I feel like the happy medium is one swap.
Yeah.
Two swaps is too many. It's just not enough time in a show. I think Australian Survivor can sort of get away with it, but it's still also a little confusing. And then no swaps is fine, but we've seen it for three seasons. That's a year and a half of no swaps. It does start to create a predictable series of episodes in the pre-merge where it's the same format over and over and over. I like three tribes of six, but without a swap at any point, or like what they did on Philippines where they had like one tribe get absorbed or whatever. They did that. They didn't do that.
All Stars too.
Yeah.
Well, All Stars, they took a player each. They, whoever lost,
I feel like it's a little bit repetitive. I think it needs to make it a, but then again, you know, the merges have been pretty exciting for me. But I'm so excited to cover a swap, and in 40 we got it, and then we didn't get it for 41, 42, and 43. So I was like, oh, bummer. And that was back in 2020. That was at the beginning of 2020. So it's literally 3 years without a swap.
Yeah.
I think no swaps would actually work if they were two tribes of nine, because there's more space for tension. There's more space for alliances to flip. Right now there's, you know, five, six players per tribe. So it's like you have to just get one person to flip, and that's kind of it. There's also a good comment here that about schoolyard picks. I think schoolyard picks are so good. They should do schoolyard pick of people from the other tribes to the swap. That's like some old school stuff right there. I really like that.
That was Gabon, right? And Gabon was chaotic, but they also had two swaps.
They didn't feed you too,
believe Fiji, yeah. And I think, like, I'm all about I think what made Survivor, the golden era of Survivor, most people agree, is like 9 through 20, right? Like that stretch, there's a couple S seasons, but like that's the stretch. Like you could even shorten that even more to 15 through 20 if you wanted to, but somewhere in there. But if you look at it from 9 through 20, you had a season divided by gender, And then the next season was a schoolyard pick. And then season 11 was, here's your two tribes that we've already determined, but you're going to have a captain for each tribe, which was Bobby John and Steph. Season 12, they did it by age. Season 13, they did it by race. We don't need to talk about the fact that Survivor did that. I can't believe it still. But it was season 12 and 13 were both four tribes. And in 12, it was four tribes of four. In 13, it was four tribes of five. Then you get to season 14. We have Melissa McNulty quit before the show even starts. And now we have 19, where we have a pick'em and all that. 15, we have the tribes are already divided. 16, it's fans versus favorites. 17, they pick. What I'm getting to with all of this is it was different every single time. Even if it was two tribes all the time, or there was four tribes, there were no three tribe starts in any of those, but it was different. And I think that's what Survivor needs to do is 40, like we were all craving the three tribes, right? Because it works better sometimes.
Right.
But 41, 42, 43, 44 are now all going to start with four tribes or three tribes. Right. Mix it up, or at least mix up how you're picking those three tribes.
I mean, I'm kind of thankful that we're not doing the two tribes to three tribes because we saw that so, and it's always a green third tribe. And I'm like, again, like, can they give it a different color at least? But
no,
I'm kind of thankful for that. And I don't love it when they do a second swap. I don't mind it at the merge. It's a little weird. They've done that a few times where they like have a random merge swap-ish for one episode, which always feels weird. But I'll take that over a second swap in like Cambodia where it's like, what is happening?
Yeah.
But Pridim, you seem to enjoy the new school merges. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
I just love the hourglass. I just can't wait.
How do I remove him from the podcast?
Yeah.
I'm with Brandon on 44. I think he said it was his favorite moment in Survivor. The hourglass.
Who paid him?
It's not the earn the merge. I think that's awful. I think it's a way, it's just being arbitrary for the sake of it. It's like, why?
You've already earned it.
Yeah, that's what I said the first time. I'm like, they already earned the merge by literally surviving like six episodes. That's earning the merge. What are they doing if not earning it? Like, did you not earn the $1 million when you got the jury vote? What do you have to do, arm wrestle Jeff to earn it? Like, earn the check. You have to wrestle it out of his,
The Outback.
Well, it's the same thing, right? You have to earn the final three now with a fire making challenge or win your way in or whatever.
It's like, and it's the game is designed to make it so that you earn it by surviving. That's the whole premise. So, but I think from 41, 42, and 43, like 41's merge, I thought was really fun with the Yase somehow surviving when Sydney plays her shot in the dark. And it just creates this like tumultuous, like, how did they do that? They shouldn't have survived the Xander and Evie and Tiffany of it all. 42's had like Omer just sort of no vote and controls the vote. He had no vote himself. And he gets Lydia out, which was just like, where did that come from? 43 is just amusing. I found it like, I said it was one of the worst gameplays we've seen. Go figure, it's the winner of the season is dictating. That's like his biggest breakout for the gameplay.
Yeah.
And I said it was some of the worst gameplay I've ever seen in a merge with 43 with Gabler. But hey, you know, anything can go on Survivor. So I'll take it. It's different. You know, I don't mind it. I don't mind being wrong every now and then. So that's sort of like where I'm like, actually for 41, 42 and 43, I don't really have a problem with the merge dynamics. Three tribes coming together is, I think, inherently more interesting often than two, but two is easier to follow. It also might be easier to create a storyline out of, you can change like two tribes is easier to follow in many ways. You look at some of your favorite seasons. They oftentimes like David Goliath, Heroes and Villains, Kaguya, not so much, but that did ultimately come down to two sides. Whereas these ones are a little bit more of a smorgasbord of like, where does everyone fit? It's hard to tell. There's all these, and then you got the advantages coming into play, which complicate the narrative, and it makes things a little bit tricky to translate onto like the story of the season and what's going down. But for the most part, I like the merges. I don't really have too much of an issue with that. I don't need earn the merge though. Those can go away. I don't need that.
And it's. I agree with you on what you're saying with like the two, you get an us versus them kind of thing, right? Like that's easy for people to digest because you only have to worry about the two sides. Am I on this team or am I on that team? You know, and I think that makes it a little bit easier. And while I like the three tribes because it makes things a little bit more unpredictable, I agree with you that it does. All of a sudden you get to these merges and you have really exciting merges taking place. You're not wrong about the votes and like the dynamics that have happened at the tribal councils. But you start to say, okay, wait, who does this person want actually out of the game and who are they with? And you don't really know that because there's too many sides going on. I don't want to go back to Ogacor versus Kucha, but there's got to be a way to make it a little bit easier to digest than a lot of times. I mean, during 43, 42, and 41, there have been numerous times in all of those seasons where the people who pay attention really closely and the filthy casuals are both sitting there going, wait, why did they do that?
Who, I mean, I asked my mom and she has no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
She is totally lost.
Yeah, it's fair. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fair. And I mean, we've had three very unpredictable winners just from the standpoint of who they are, like what archetype they play, all of that. But I mean, all three of them, it was pretty shocking to see them win when they actually got the votes to win. It was pretty shocking. Even if you could see Marianne coming from final six, or if you could see Erica winning, because who else was going to win in that final three? It still felt shocking at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the, in all three of them, and you can kind of make this argument for most winners, but all three of them had knockout final tribals. And that is some, I always forget until I get to the finale how much I enjoy watching the final tribal council. And even though I do not in any way like the discussion forum, I way prefer the questions. Mm-hmm. I think what made Erica, Marianne, and Gabler, all three of them so satisfying, is I sat down and I watched their final tribal with my dad, who hadn't watched any amount of that season. And he was like, oh my God, they're so good at speaking. Like, this is so convincing. Mm-hmm. That is very energizing. So I feel like if you get someone who's a good speaker at the end, that's going to make the winner feel really satisfying.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Definitely.
Yeah. Now, something that I was thinking about coming into this podcast, and I just kind of wanted to throw it out there, and, you know, I won't go on like a 14-minute intro into this, but do you all feel that it kind of goes back to what we're talking about with the backstories, but do you feel that Survivor is trying to make everybody feel like an underdog nowadays? Because we have seen three underdog characters win in this new era, but do you feel like the producers are trying to make everybody feel like an underdog in some capacity rather than just having some people who are just like better in some ways?
I mean, it might just be happenstance, because the clearly the front runner that looks like they're controlling the game is just not winning, whether it's like Ricard or it's Jesse or I don't know, Omer, I guess you could say, or even Lindsay to an extent. They just happen to trip up at the finish line. And it might just be three seasons of that happening. I don't know off the top of my head, thinking about like, I mean, Tony wasn't an underdog.
No.
You know, Tommy wasn't an underdog. Obviously, Chris is his own thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call Chris. He's not an underdog or an overdog. He was
Underwood.
He was an Underwood. That's what he was.
Yeah.
you know, and even Nick to an extent was a bit of an underdog, but also not really. So I don't know. Maybe. I think it might be more just circumstance of the fact that we've had three winners now who are all playing somewhat. They're not out in front. They're not controlling everything. They're not the puppet master, you know?
Because what I was thinking was, like, even with somebody like Jesse, we hear so much about his backstory and what he had to overcome to get there that it does feel like they're trying to set him up as, like, if he wins this game, think about everything prior to this game that kind of led him to this moment.
So, the inspirations, the narrative.
Yeah, that's more of his underdog there, where I almost feel like that they feel like that is what people are connecting with more, is the underdog character. Mm-hmm. And maybe that is because of like the culture changing and certain areas or certain communities that really were being like disregarded or ignored or just not represented are now starting to come to the forefront. And now they're pretty much automatically feeling like underdogs, because it's like, that's what we were used to seeing. But I don't know. I have felt like in the last three seasons, it's very hard to find somebody who doesn't feel like, at least in some capacity, they were an underdog to win the game. And maybe you're right. Maybe it is just the fact that three underdogs really have won the game.
I mean, yeah, like maybe we'll see for 44, whoever wins, like, do we get a similar pattern, or is this somebody who was in control? Did they lead an alliance? Were they clearly a front runner for multiple episodes? I never felt like Jesse was an underdog going in or at any point in the season, really, because he was like from the very first episode, he was the in control of the swing vote status. He literally got a whole montage like, this is how you blindside people on Survivor. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, underdog doesn't do that. Like underdog doesn't have that happen for him. You know, I'm not sure about 42. It was probably just Omer. Even Mike, you know, didn't feel like the underdog. So. Mm-hmm. I think it may be more happenstance, but they definitely have like the backstories that fuel this person. But I almost feel like for me, that's not what I'm accustomed to on Survivor as an underdog. So like maybe in life, you could say they're an underdog to an extent with this montage that we are seeing of how they got here that has led them to being. But I almost feel like we just have like 18 underdogs sort of. It's like 18 Davids.
Yeah.
In David versus Goliath a little. Yep.
Yeah, I think also the reason that the like quote unquote underdogs have been winning is because the new era is so short and so fast that whatever the opposite of an underdog is, like the assumed winner, they can't hide for that long. Mm. You know, like Jesse, they knew to get rid of Jesse, and Omer, they knew to get rid of Omer. So I think you have to be an underdog, or you have to at least be, as Adam Klein says, like the most average person out there to win, because otherwise you're going to get targeted if you're too far on either side.
The one thing I've really liked and I think is going to continue moving forward is when you sit down and you like look at this cast for the first time, it no longer feels easy to say it's going to be Wendell or Dom on this season, huh? Even though we all said Brennan Shapiro, but it was like, it's going to be one of those three. And it was one of those three. Like, those were the three winner picks on that season. It feels like we've kind of gotten away from that in this new era where who you would traditionally think was going to do very well at Survivor, even to a standpoint of you could have Tom Westman and Wendell and those two and compare those. And then you can turn around and you can say, okay, or they're going to play like Sandra or Parvati or that underdog female player, Natalie White. It doesn't feel like we can lump it in like that anymore. And I think that's such a great thing for the show.
Yeah. Because anyone can kind of win.
Anybody.
Yeah.
We were getting a little bit of a string of like, to be fair, Ben was a bit of an underdog, but he didn't feel like one up until like the last three episodes. Yeah. He really wasn't. He was out in front. If you rewatch HHH, Rick Devens, underdog, but honestly with the screen time he got, it didn't really feel like he was that much of an, he was the guy to win. He just didn't have the social game to bring him there. Yeah. So yeah, I feel like one thing about 41, 42, 43, and probably with 44, to be honest, if I had to bank on it, is that you're going to see like anyone can win. There is no front like Dominic and Wendell or Tommy, these guys who are just like, you're clearly, or Tony in some regard. Mm-hmm. Although to be fair, winners at war, a lot of people could have won, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to get that. Or like Edge of Extinction, you know, there were a couple of people I thought for a while, like this is clearly the front runner to win the season. Obviously the Edge changed it, but that's not so much the cast as it was the twist. 41, 42, 43, we've seen an eclectic group of people go far, and it's hard to predict. I have never been more wrong than I was literally 3 months ago.
You and everybody but us. In 40... Right, Alexa?
You take that credit, Phil. That was you.
I was the only one at the time who was like, dude, the Ellie move, phenomenal move. And everybody's like,
really?
What are you talking about? You're an idiot.
Yeah, he was.
I really was. You can go listen to the podcast. I said it was a good move. Me and Alexa, that was like the most, I think that might have been like the biggest fight, air quotes, that we've ever had on this podcast.
The kindest fight out there.
It was so unconventional that I'm like, this shouldn't usually work. I didn't think it was because of the way that they showed him up to that point. I'm like, he's clearly the dodo. He's like, Gabler might be one of the most unique winners as far as presentation in the narrative. Mm-hmm. There's like, I used to follow this format where like they would call the different types of people that made it to the end of the season. They edit them all. Every season of Survivor generally has the same archetypes that the show portrays that go far. There's always like the front runner, the second in command. There's like the likable underdog, but they're usually not going to win. They get picked off toward the end and they all kind of can win. But more often than not, there's like a ranking of who's most likely. Mm-hmm. And then there's the one guy who's like the Philip Shepherd who just, they'll go to the end, like Nora, you know, but they don't win, or like Debbie, or they fill the slot every cast. And I felt like Gabler was that guy, and then he won, which is just I don't think I can relate him to any 42 previous winners that have happened in that regard. Not even like Bob. People say like Bob Crowley's this old dude, but I'm like, and he didn't have like the greatest game, but I'm like, nah, but
Bob's a favorite.
Bob was a favorite, and he was an underdog, and he was also like shown to be very resourceful, likable within the cast. So I don't know. Gabler didn't have that. He wasn't undermined very often. He wasn't shown like Dodo putting palm fronds on people's faces and like, you know, whatever.
Gabler's second half is really strong, but you don't think about it because his first half was so bad.
And yeah, a little bit.
And everybody wants to make the comparison to Bob just because they're both old men who won. But the thing is with Bob, when you watch that season, Bob has the best social game out of all of them, with the exception for what he does to Randy. I mean, he really does. Like, he is playing the game better than everybody, maybe other than Maddie. But like, you can see it. Like, he knew what he was doing, and his wife comes out, oh yeah, he's living in his element, he's doing everything, like he loves this, he's here. Gabler wasn't getting that vibe the whole time. But I think what's interesting is, if you sat down Erica, I would have never written off right away. Like, I'm talking when I look at the cast. But if you sat me down and you showed me all 18 people from 42 and 43, Gabler and Marianne, after hearing their voices and seeing what they put on their questions, probably would have been the two people I said they have no chance of winning. They have no chance of winning. And then you sit down and you watch their season take place, and they start off slow, and then they start to build, and you start saying, wait, can they actually win this game? But they would have been who I would have written off right away. And I've done that with – I did that with Tony back in 28. I just wrote him off. I thought he was going to be a buffoon. But – what I love about
he
was lucky. He was on the right season. Yeah. But what I love about Marianne and Gabler's wins is it has set the stage for, you can no longer, you're not crossing off that one name, like you said, like a Nora, where you're like, this, she just can't win. And I keep saying that with Carolyn this year. Carolyn's never going to win. Carolyn's never going to win.
I think Carolyn compared herself to Nora, but she can win.
Yeah.
And I think that you look at the last three seasons, and it's like people like Carolyn, who's such an eccentric person, being eccentric isn't necessarily going to hold you back anymore. I think it would in the first 40 seasons. Mm-hmm. That is something that I actually kind of like, because those players can also get the check, which is kind of cool. And they're going to get a lot of airtime either way. And now they actually stand a chance, and you can't just write them off. They're not just the jester in the crowd. You know, as Gabler put that, he said like that analogy or whatever, that metaphor, he's like, you know, you poison the chalice of the king. And I was just jokingly like, I don't know if you guys watch Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon, but I was like, there's in the book, there's the character of Mushroom, the jester. And I was like, Gabler's kind of like the mushroom of the group. He doesn't really have like a reliable narrator going on. But he actually kind of was the reliable narrator the whole time. And it was my perception of him that led me astray. So I'm looking forward to seeing players like Carolyn, or just bigger characters that are usually going to get written off quickly. I'm not going to write them off this time.
So I know that we're about to wrap up. So I'll
you guys don't have to.
We don't have to. I know Alexa's got to go, and I don't want to make her just like peace. But I mean, Paridium, if you want to give like a really long-winded answer to these two questions, then I'm all for it. But what is one thing that you're really hoping for 44, 45, 46%? And I'm not talking about like get out of Fiji. You know what I mean? Because we've heard that for the last 12 seasons, and who knows if we're ever going to get out of Fiji. Hopefully we will. Maybe we will. Who knows? I mean, question mark, smiley face. I don't know. But maybe we will. Do you like, what is one thing though that you're really hoping, just from what you actually see on screen, that's going to happen moving forward?
I need more moments where they're rooted in like, I never need the producers to give me a twist or a format change that drives the narrative. I really want it to come from the people. So I'm hoping, I always say, I'm not looking to change the wheel or reinvent the wheel every season. There's a reason I love Survivor. I've been watching it since season 18, and you know, it's not because I'm looking for a new show. So ultimately what I'm hoping to get out of this coming season is just a colorful cast of characters who have a good time and they're funny. I need a good sense of humor. I need people who are willing to, I need unintentional comedy. I think we're going to get that with some of these people, which is why I'm looking forward to it. I'm hearing Jeff say good things. I feel pretty good about what we're going to get. I hope it's good. But for me, that's what I always need. I just need a good group of people who are going to have a fun time. And I do like it when they get dramatic, because I watch a lot of Big Brother. Some of my favorite moments, my favorite moment is when people are very much not happy with each other.
Yeah.
But I do need some comedy in there too. I don't need it to be super depressing and heavy. And like, it's a reality show, people. Get a grip. Like,
get a grip.
You're not changing the world and nothing much. It's just have a fun time. You're playing for 26 days on an island. Put some perspective on it a little bit. $1 million is a lot of money. I get that. That should fuel you to care a little bit. Don't get comfortable. Don't get complacent. Don't make for boring TV. But I just need some fun narratives with some naturally born great moments from these people that are infused in the game. They make big moves, but also they're born from not like trying to put on an act for a show. They're just, they got to do it. Like, I loved what Jesse did with Cody, as much as it hurt to watch. Mm-hmm. That's what I need. And not every episode, but that's what I want. It's tough because I feel like right now the best thing for Survivor is addition by subtraction. Mm-hmm. Get rid of some of the stuff they've been doing. Get us back to square one and move from there. That's my hard part. So I'm trying to like consolidate, not being overly negative. Mm-hmm. I still love the show. I still like it. But that's really what I'm looking for going forward. I still don't know what they're going to do for 45 or 46. To me, that's like, that's the biggest question mark. I think they're probably going to stay in Fiji. I think we're probably going to see 18 players. Do we go 9-9? You don't need to move the needle so much, but like, we don't need Edge of Extinction. That's too big. That's too far.
Yeah.
Just give me a solid cast. Survivor, Big Brother, that's all you need. Let them play the game.
Yeah.
Have a swap. You know, a couple of really good challenges. Maybe that's what I want. I don't ever say this. Give me the classics. The classic challenges are like a third of the episode every week. And they're pretty much like, I don't even pay attention. Yeah. Like, they're kind of generic. Gasp.
Think about how successful that was last
season. And Owen almost pooped on somebody, according to Owen.
Yeah. I mean, great. You know, put that in the show. Give me a funny confessional. I'm like looking at like that episode and I'm like, they had a really funny scene where they were looking for the advantage or whatever and they couldn't find it. That was kind of funny, but I'm also like, you know, it's kind of born out of the show putting something in there and then the players just can't find it. I'm like, it's okay. I think we could have been doing without that. I don't know. Anyway, that's a long answer, but.
Yeah. And just, I will actually give a pretty short one on this, but like something that based on the whole conversation we've just had here, and this is for 45 and 46, because 44 already played, but I think for 45, 46, and it's in line with what Peridium said, don't put so much pressure on yourselves when you go out there. Like Lindsay from season 43, huge Survivor fan. It's been like her whole life. She loves it. Like, she can't get enough. And she got voted out super early and she's been super positive since getting voted out. There's only going to be one winner of the show, and there's going to be one 18th place finisher, one 17th place winner, one 16th place finisher. And if you go out there and you're already worried about how am I going to be perceived? How am I going to be this? What's my legacy on this show going to be? Am I going to be an idiot? Like, be okay with going out there and being a fool, because remember, the greatest player of all time spoke llama. Okay. He spoke llama. He looked like one of the biggest buffoons ever. And he won the game, and he's the greatest player to ever play American Survivor. And so I just think, like, don't put so much pressure on yourself. Don't be worried about all that stuff. Now, this is coming from somebody who, if I went out there, I'd be a nervous wreck. But do as I say, not as I do, or something like that. I just think that's a good one for these castaways, because you're going to be more well-loved the more authentic you are. And I think Marianne proved that back in season 42. And I think just go out there, be you, do what you want to do, play the game. And if you go out really early because it didn't work out for you, some of the best players of all time we probably don't know are some of the best players of all time because they got voted out in the first 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days. Like, there's nothing you can do. It happens to people.
If you
like,
go early, you can put your face on a pillow and sell it in the merch store.
Oh, man, there's the reference.
And there it is, Peridium. Now, last question, and then we'll get out of here. Who's your winner pick?
Who's my winner pick? So I still haven't released the video for that yet. I don't mind saying. I've been waffling between two people, and I think I'm going with Matt G.
Matt G. Okay, ooh, not tall Matt. Beard. You're going Matt G.
Not Matt Blankenship.
Okay.
He Matt reminds Beard. Me too much of Eric Reichenbach. He said he's like, I'm kind of like Eric Reichenbach. And I was like, that's exactly who I was thinking of.
But he's so great. Eric Reichenbach's a great player. Don't tell him.
Well, yeah. I mean, Final Five twice in a row. It's not everyone can do that. But yeah, I think I'm going to go with Matt G right now. And until it's out on Wednesday, that's my next video, is talking about who I think I'm ranking the cast for, who I think is going to possibly give me the most versus who I think is going to give me the least as far as winner potential, with almost nothing to go off of, but like a 1 minute, you know, Instagram, TikTok, whatever video.
What more could you need?
Matt G. I mean, they gave him like the half of the trailer for the 44 at the end of 43. I was like, half of that was just him climbing a rock. He's not going to fall and go. Like, I don't think that's true. He's not the one that we see on the beach in the premiere. So I'm like, maybe they like to go big with their characters. They'll probably feature the winner in some way. So I'll go with Matt G. He seems like a nice guy. He's also like, I listened to your guys. You guys had a podcast like a week ago about this. And you said like, he's of a good age. He's a dad. Like, he fits a lot of the check boxes for people that would win. I could see him doing well.
Yeah. There you go.
Pretty, what are you doing this season? What can fans expect to see on your channel, on your Patreon?
It's all Survivor. I mean, it's between here and probably the beginning of Big Brother in July. It's all Survivor. I'm putting out a lot of, you know, the same videos you guys would expect me to put out if you've seen my channel before. Once every week on Wednesdays, if I have the time, I might do a second video. I'm probably going to be covering Survivor 44. If we have the merge episode, possibly a swap episode, after the premiere, I'm going to be doing a video. After the finale, I'll do a video. And if they give me good episodes, I'll probably be so excited that I'll just make a video on that. So that's what Winners at War did. I haven't done it really since then to that extent. But if you give me good episodes, I'll always jump in and talk about it. Otherwise, expect a new video every Wednesday talking about Survivor in some way, shape, or form. I've got like a video series coming out talking about players who have destroyed their own game. Looking at instances of that, players who showed up were not going home, and by the end of the episode, they were getting their torch snuffed, usually through their own actions.
I love that.
And I've got like That's 20 great. Names on a list, so doing that. Players who have made underrated dumb moves. I'm kind of skewing a little bit more towards the negative side of things. I'm oftentimes quite positive. I'm looking at players who made underrated dumb moves. I talked about it 5 years ago. I'm looking into more of those. Players who were unlucky, players who are misunderstood, who made misunderstood moves in the history of the show, stuff like that. Also, I want to do a video possibly about the iceberg, Survivor Iceberg, because it's just fun to talk about behind the scenes stuff.
If you guys know what the iceberg is.
So I know a lot about this show, and the iceberg concept is like right up my alley. I figured I might as well, you know, unleash a lot about what I know about this, and hopefully CBS doesn't mind too much.
Yeah. That, hey. I would love to listen to that one.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. So that's exciting content from Peridium, which is always there. You know, I mean, you just did your zero vote finalist video, which is very exciting. I won't spoil anything. I'll just sit here.
I was able to talk to Owen before I released it. And I felt bad because I'm like, I don't know if I would put him on, but I put that video together right before the finale of 43. And so I wasn't sure if anyone was going to even be in it from 43. Mm-hmm. And then I did it. I was able to talk to him and I was like, I'm putting out this video that you would be eligible for, but you didn't make it the cut. And I decided not to go back and re-edit it. And he's like, don't worry about it, dude. It's fine.
as he's like, he's got your name on a list now. You know, he's like, yeah, no, it's fine, dude. Don't worry.
I mean, you know, technically he could have me in a yearbook because we went to the same high school. So there's that.
Nice.
So my name is on a list.
That's fun. That's
the more you know.
Well, that's all he has to do. Just let's see the yearbook photos. Come on, Owen. Let's go.
I did put his old yearbook photo on my YouTube video for 43.
I love that.
So it's pretty funny. Yeah. Little freshman Owen.
You can find us at 10 p.m. Eastern past everybody's bedtimes in 48 hours, like literally. 2 days from now, we are going to be recapping the 2 hour, I assume two people voted out, premiere of Survivor 44. Now I feel like it's happening after this conversation. We're going to be putting out a lot of consistent content. We're going to be getting our normal weekly podcast. We already have a predictions guest booked for next Monday, but we are going to make y'all wait in suspense for a little bit longer. Phil has an after show. John and McKenna, two of our patrons, who I'm sure you've heard from in the past, they're going to be doing something called Survivor Rewind. So we're going to have a lot of consistent content for all listeners, but also especially for patrons. So now is a great time to become a patron at patreon.com/Survivor Specialist. We also listed Peridium's Patreon page down in this description as well. So make sure to check both out. Pridium, it was fantastic as always to have you. We would love to have you back on.
Thank you for having
chatting
me.
In the future. And yeah. I hope Matthew doesn't fall off that rock.
And one last thing, everybody, get your
prop bets in. Do your prop bets.
Prop bets. Get your prop bets in. Get your prop bets in. And if you're not a $20 patron, become one, because then you can actually play along in the fantasy game. But if you're playing the fantasy game, get that into us by Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So you got to get those in. That's it. That's all we got. Pridium, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.